Oh my goodness, it's People Pleaser from a strange apartment in Salt Lake City. It's People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer. Normally I'm in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, but right now I am doing some new play development at a theater in Salt Lake called Pioneer Theater. That's a great little regional theater that I like to work at from time to time. It's been a minute since I've been there, and I'm working on some new plays. We are live on YouTube. There's nobody here yet, but we're live. We're doing it. Everett's here because Everett's always here. And we're live on TikTok. And people over on TikTok are really, really upset about the bucket hat not making an appearance in this podcast. And I feel that energy. And I accept it. I accept that people are upset that the bucket hat is not here. I can't wear a bucket hat every day. I can't always be bucket hat guy. And also, I have headphones on right now. And bucket hats are great for many things. They're not great for having a hat or for having headphones on. Sorry. Like the hat I'm wearing right now, I'm wearing a ball cap. And you can wear headphones over a ball cap. But you cannot wear headphones easily over a bucket hat or under. If I had earbuds, I could do it, but I don't. I have big, you know, studio headphones. So had to make a sacrifice on the bucket hat, but I'm just happy that so many people are missing the bucket hat energy right here at the top of the show. Thanks for being here. For the last few weeks, it's just been me and you over on the internet, the live people who are here watching on TikTok Live and watching on YouTube Live. And it's just been us, and I haven't been having guests. I'm probably not going to have a guest for another couple weeks because I'm still sort of on the move. I'm going to be in Salt Lake this week and next week working on new plays. And I want to get a guest in the studio. I want to get someone to come into the apartment, dude, and sit across from me and chat with me. And I want to get a video of that. So until I can do that, it's just going to be me chatting with you. Anyway, I got stuff I want to talk about. I wouldn't do the podcast if I didn't, okay? First of all, and this isn't what the episode's about, but maybe I do need to do an episode about this at some point. Social media platforms need to fix their community guidelines, violations, like systems, whatever that is. Because it's not just TikTok, it's Twitter, it's Instagram. It's a problem. It's a big problem. And it's not a new problem. And it's not a problem that's unique to me. It's a problem lots of people struggle. It's like I get so miffed and frustrated, and I have to do so much like meditative letting go whenever one of my videos gets taken down for an erroneous community guidelines violation that I don't understand. Today I posted a video. This is literally what the video was. The video was two people talking back and forth, as I'm prone to do, as I do. And it was two people saying, like, I'm going to do the exact conversation for you. The first person says, we need to do something about this problem. The other person says, yeah. The first person says, it's getting out of hand, you know, and we need to, we can't keep doing nothing. The other person says, I completely agree. First person says, children don't feel safe in places where they should feel safe, and we need to do something, anything, to show that we care about addressing that problem. Second person says, I'm totally with you. We're totally on the same page. And I don't even think we need to even say what it is that we agree on. I think that we're so in sync that we don't even need to say it. Then the first person's like, well, now I think we do need to say it because you're making me think that we need to say it with what you said. And and then the second guy's like, no, I don't think we need to say it. I think we can trust that we agree and that we're thinking of the same thing. First guy goes, let's just both say what we're thinking of on the count of three. One, two, three. First guy says common sense gun law reform, and at the same time, the second guy says ban drag queens. That's the video. That's the video. And the first guy also says, what the fuck did you just say? That's the punchline. That's the punchline. But that's the video, okay? That's because I don't know if you've heard about this, but Texas is like introducing legislation to ban minors from going to drag shows because that is the most pressing threat that needs to be addressed with minors, not the fact that Texas is leading the nation in school shootings, but drag shows. Drag shows is priority number one. So I was satirizing that. The only thing I can think of that TikTok might have been flagging, and I think this is a problem with AI doing this, with artificial intelligence doing this. The only thing I can think of is that I said the phrase ban drag queens in the video. Of course, that's not me saying that. That's the other character, the conservative character in the video. It's a satirization of the fact that the solution to the problem of Texas leading the nation in school shootings is, like, before we'll even look at or consider or even think about addressing gun laws, we will ban children or minors from being able to attend drag shows, you know? So I'm satirizing that. If a human were evaluating the video, if a human who worked at TikTok were looking at the video and reviewing it to see if it has hate speech in it or hateful behavior, which is what it was flagged for. It was flagged for, quote, hateful behavior. If a human were looking at it, they would hopefully understand that it was satire and that I'm not saying ban drag queens, that there are legislators in Texas who are saying that, but I'm not saying that. I'm making fun of them for saying that and calling them out for being bad people. So I'm kind of doing the opposite of hateful behavior directed at, like, a marginalized community. I'm sort of supporting the marginalized community. But I think that an AI flagged the language ban drag queens, and either that's what happened, and now the video is, I mean, it's, I submitted an appeal, I always do, but one of two things always happen with the appeals when I submit them. Either A, they review the video right away, and within an hour it's restored, because every single time I get one of these community guidelines violations, it winds up being bunk. And it's never been right, ever, in 2.5 years of posting every single day on TikTok. I've never had a community guidelines violation that was correct. But either they would restore it right away, or they never restore it, and nothing ever happens. I don't even get, like, a, we reviewed your video and found that it did contain that problem. They just never get back to me. They just say, your video is under review, and your appeal has been submitted, and I never hear from them again. This one's looking like it's going to be that. It's looking like it's going to be one of those, because it's been like 5 hours since I submitted the appeal and I haven't heard back. And I think that that means that it's probably just going to stay under review. But this isn't what I'm talking about on the episode today. I just wanted to start off with that beef that I have to air, because I don't actually have any kind of solution to that problem. And it's not, like I said, it's not a new problem. It's just frustrating. And I also think that it's something that we should have unilateral support for. I think that everyone should agree that, like, it's too easy to get content taken down on the internet these days. I think we can all agree that there are things that probably shouldn't be on these platforms. I think there are, like, things that everyone would be like, yeah, you shouldn't be able to post certain images, and I think, without even saying them out loud, I think you could make a list of, like, things that we would all agree shouldn't be on there. But I think that what needs to happen with community guidelines is they need to be looked at and they need to be examined thoroughly, because it's a massive problem. And this is my fucking livelihood. This is what I do, unfortunately, is I'm a social media content creator. It's what I do. It's how I make my money. And every time I get one of these stupid community guidelines violations, it threatens my livelihood. It threatens my ability to do what I do for a job. So that leads me into what I am talking about today, which is this job of being an internet content creator, and making podcasts and videos and all that stuff on the internet. This thing that I've been doing full time for 2 years now. Look, I like my job. I like what I do. And luckily, I think I'm good at it. I think it suits me. I think it suits the kind of storyteller that I am. I think in many aspects of the way TikTok is structured and the way that Instagram is transitioning suit my set of skills. And that's good for me, except for when I get erroneous community guidelines violations. But in general, that's good for me, that the way that people are consuming story and humor and music right now works out for me, that it's a format that I enjoy and that I think I'm good at. But The problem is it's not great for nearly everyone. There are so many artists and storytellers and creators out there in the world who don't really care to be making funny, high energy, 30 to 90 second videos about their art. They're happy to be just a painter or a sculptor or a dancer or a cellist in an orchestra, or, you know, like, they don't want to have to be making 30 to 90 second videos set to trending TikTok sounds about what they do and what they make. I'm sort of going into this backwards, so I'm gonna back it up. I don't know if y'all have heard about the drama surrounding like Charlie XCX and Halsey and FKA Twigs, and I think even Florence and the Machine, where they were sort of beefing with their record labels. The beef was centered around the fact that their record labels didn't want to release certain songs from their albums, or even the album as a whole, unless they would agree to try to create a viral TikTok trend with part of the song, part of the single, or part of a song from the album. So these record labels are essentially holding their songs ransom unless these artists will agree to manufacture some virality on social media with these songs. I saw a musician on TikTok responding to this who was not a signed musician, who was an indie musician like myself. And his take, I get it. I understood it, what he was saying. He was kind of talking about trade-offs, and he was saying, like, look, I get that it's frustrating to feel like you don't own your music outright and that you don't get to make the decision on when and how it's posted and when and how it's released. I get that that's frustrating, but also you've made it as a musician and you are like a multimillionaire signed recording artist who goes to award shows and goes on massive international tours and makes lots of money and has millions of fans worldwide. If the trade-off is the record label gets to call the shots on how your music is released and how your art is released, that's frustrating, but like, I would gladly switch places with you, is what this person was saying. That was their argument. It's like, if you want to swap places with me, just an indie artist who's just trying to get anybody to listen to my songs on Spotify, like, I have full control over when I post my songs to Spotify because I don't have a record label, but it's very hard for me to get anyone to listen to my songs or care, and it's very hard to get venues to want to book me to play live and all of that jazz. And this person was just saying, like, you know, cry me a river, boo-hoo, there are trade-offs with being a signed artist. And I get that, but I also fully get the issue that Halsey and Charlie XCX and FKA Twigs have, and I think I heard Florence and the Machine too, have with their record labels, that their record labels are like, hey, make a viral sound out of one of your songs from your album, like Lizzo did, or we're not releasing the album or the single. If you can't make it into a viral sound, we won't release it. And I get the beef that they're like, hey, that's cool that Lizzo did that. And Lizzo's music is really well suited for like fun, upbeat TikTok trends. It works in that style. It's a fun thing for people to do a dance trend to. And it's very like usable for like, that's Lizzo's style of music. Lizzo's style of music is about feeling good and good vibes and pumping people up and you know, like self-love, and who doesn't love Lizzo? Like, we all love Lizzo. But that's not necessarily the kind of music that these other artists are releasing. And that's not the kind of music that they were signed initially to make. Like, the reason why the record label signed them in the first place is because of their particular voice, their unique voice, their particular way in, you know? And what makes them special and what makes them a unique artist. What the label is essentially telling them now, after, you know, signing them and taking over ownership of their songs, is we don't really care actually what kind of album you made. We own the album and we want you to figure out a way to make it a viral TikTok trend. And we don't care if that works for you or not. We don't care if that works in your purview of like what kind of artist you are or what you wanted to say with this album or how you want people to experience this album. Make it a viral TikTok song, because that's where we are. That's what sells, and that's what's going to help us get people to listen to this song. So, and look, I'll even play devil's advocate for the label and say like, yeah, the label's just doing business. That's what labels do. They're not artists. They're capitalists. They're looking at the numbers and looking at how they're going to make the best return on the investment. Because the label pays for the record. That's why the label owns the record. The label's the one that pays for the studio time and pays for like the record to get. They're the ones that like make it so that artists can spend several months in the studio and have their full-time job be recording an album. That's why they own it. And they rightfully, because they put the money into it, get to have some say over how it's released. And they're just trying to figure out how to make the best ROI, you know, on the album. And I get that too. But like, do you see the problem here? Like I said earlier, making TikToks and stuff, that's something I enjoy doing. And luckily it works out well with my skill set. And I think that there's a certain kind of song that I write that works out well for this format. There's other songs that are more serious that I don't think work out well for TikTok. And I think that has borne out as I've posted videos of my more serious material and more serious songs, that like the TikTok algorithm that exists everywhere now, that exists on Twitter, that exists on Instagram, that exists on YouTube, doesn't like my more serious stuff nearly as much as it likes the more lighthearted or comical stuff. But this is a problem. Are you seeing the problem that like what's happening is we are homogenizing media and we are homogenizing art. We are funneling everything, the diverse landscape of all the different kinds of art and different kinds of stories and different kinds of approaches into storytelling into one thing. We're saying, make me a TikTok about it or I'm not interested. And it's not just the big bad label that's saying that. The label is responding to what a market is doing. And it's this weird sort of tug of war, because I think as a content creator, it seems to be an interplay with the market and the algorithm. The algorithm has determined that the market doesn't want a certain tone or a certain flavor. So the algorithm suppresses that tone or flavor. And because of that, the market seems to show that it wants the flavor that the algorithm promotes more. But it's sort of a chicken and egg thing. Is the algorithm responding to the market, or is the market just reflective of what is put in front of them? Because so many of us don't really choose, I don't think any of us choose what shows up on our timeline. I don't really choose what shows up on my YouTube landing page. I don't choose what shows up on my TikTok For You page. I don't choose what shows up in my Instagram timeline, my Twitter timeline. It just is there. I just open it up and they just show me what I'm going to look at today as I scroll. And I definitely inform the algorithm by what I spend time on. What stops me? What stops me from scrolling? I'm not picking what's there, but I am picking what I stop on. And I'm telling, you know, the producers and the record labels and the algorithm and the people who work at these companies what it is that I'm stopping on and what's catching my attention. So I guess it's like the conversation I want to have is like, what is our role as the audience? It's really easy to be like, they're doing it. The record label's doing it. The algorithm is doing it. The people who, the billionaires who run TikTok are doing it. They're the ones who are forcing this homogenization. But do we play a part in it? You know, you hear people all the time criticizing Hollywood and the lack of originality, the lack of original ideas, and like everything's just becoming a Marvel movie. Like if it's not Marvel, why even put it in theaters? Everything's just going straight to streaming. Nobody wants to take the financial risk of opening in theaters. It's an easier financial risk to just go straight to streaming, which most movies are better in the theater. They just are. That's how they were designed to be seen, is on a big screen in the dark. But the movies that do the best continuously through a capitalistic lens in the theaters are Marvel movies and like Star Wars and big tentpole properties, existing IP. And we the market are telling them that that's what we want more of, and at the same time complaining that they keep feeding us the same old bullshit. So I guess I'm just looking at it going, how much culpability do we have in this, you know? And are we willing to take accountability for that, for the role that we play in it? Like, two massive multiverse movies came out a couple weeks apart from each other. Everything Everywhere All at Once by Daniels and Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness by Sam Raimi. Daniels had been out, I think, four or five weeks when Multiverse of Madness came out. And Daniels was just, and Everything Everywhere All at Once by Daniels was about ready to be out of theaters. It probably had another couple weeks left of its like theatrical run. And in its opening weekend, Multiverse of Madness, the Doctor Strange movie, outsold Everything Everywhere All at Once at the box office. Everything Everywhere All at Once is an original film that's not based on existing IP, that's not based on big tentpole, it's not a big tentpole franchise. And one of the most original movies to come out in years. Fantastic, top to bottom, a better movie than Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. Not even comparable in terms of quality. Doctor Strange is what it is. It's a Marvel movie and like a fine one. It's like a middle of the road Marvel movie. It's fine. You can enjoy it just fine if you know what you're getting into. It's a fine trip to the theater. It blew Everything Everywhere All at Once out of the water when it came to ticket sales. And I'm including myself in this. I went and saw it. Of course I did. There's only so many movies that are opening in theaters these days at all. So when a big movie comes out in theaters, like, I'm not going to watch Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness on Disney Plus in 2 months. I'm going to watch it in the theater. So I'm not blaming anyone for going to see it in the theater, but we're not also supporting original ideas, you know? So these people, the record labels, the algorithms, they're responding to us. There is the aspect of like, we're not really choosing what they're putting in front of us, but we are showing them what we want to pay attention to. And they're just responding to what it is that we're paying attention to. And I don't know, this is another thing where I'm not exactly sure what the solution is, but it is frustrating to me as an artist, as a storyteller, the amount of people I know who are massively talented, who are sort of fading into obscurity because they don't really know how to make good TikToks. And also because like TikTok doesn't really jive with what they do. They're like a great abstract painter and it's no longer good enough for them to have an Instagram account where they just show photos of their painting and say, here's my latest painting, and just show a photo of it, because Instagram used to be a photo app. Now Instagram is all about Instagram Reels. It's basically a video app now. They're just trying to be TikTok 2.0, and they're trying to beat TikTok. And so I have these like painter friends who are like, or photographer friends who are, what they do is photography, and they're like, yeah, Instagram used to be my app. It used to be the place where I showed off what I do. And now I have to make a video of me like taking the photos, and then it's set to like some upbeat trending song, and then I show the results of the photo session in the video. I can't just show you a photo of like, I can't just show you the photo that I took or a photo of the painting that I painted. I have to have a progress video of like me making the painting. Same thing for dancers. Like TikTok, when it first started out, was sort of just for dancing, right? That's what everyone knew it as, was teenagers dancing. It was a very specific form of dancing, though. It wasn't like people doing really impressive, like modern dance that's very emotional and evocative. No, it was like a very specific kind of Gen Z low effort dancing. And it sort of stayed that way when it comes to dance on TikTok. There are people out there who are really trying to show beautiful, athletic, muscular dance and film it really well. But if it doesn't fit the mold of what is popping in the algorithm, what's getting people to stop scrolling, it doesn't do well. And it's just homogenizing all of these different forms. It's funneling everyone into either like join us and be in this mold of TikTok, or get left behind. And even me, to a certain extent, I said earlier, I feel like I'm lucky that TikTok works with my skill set and that I enjoy doing it. But I still feel frequently that I'm just enough outside of the box on TikTok that it's part of the reason why I don't do as well as other creators. That, like, I don't do things that the TikTok algorithm wants me to do. I don't edit my videos in the app. I don't use the in-app effects or the in-app text additions. I don't use the in-app, like, captions. I do my own captions outside of the app. There's all these things where, like, I retain creative control over the video so that it's still uniquely mine, where I can feel TikTok being like, no, fall in line. Don't even try any minor aberrations from the norm. Do it exactly like this. Do it with this color scheme and use this kind of text in your video and use these trending sounds and don't step outside of that. Because I even go and like get my own music and stuff, and I can feel that even just that like slight sidestep of the norm is enough to not get the same circulation, you know? So I don't know. I think that that's kind of the point. I think that's the idea. I think I've thoroughly introduced it. Talking about the homogenization of art, if you're just getting here, talking about the homogenization of art, how everything is sort of being TikTokified across all social media, that no matter what your art discipline is, no matter if you're a sculptor, a dancer, a painter, a singer, a violinist, just a piano player, everyone wants you to be able to funnel it into a 30 to 90 second poppy video that can be easily shared, that can go viral. So that's what we're talking about. And now I'm going to turn it over to the comments. We're live on TikTok right now. We're live on YouTube. What are your thoughts? Caleb over on YouTube says, I do really enjoy the MCU, but there's so much stories out there that no one is seeing. In fact, the MCU could make more inspiring, relatable stuff if they weren't tied down to specifics or playing it safe. Completely agree, Caleb. I enjoy the MCU. The MCU is a TV show. It's a very expensive TV show. It's the most expensive TV show that's ever existed. That's what it is. And it's just one TV show of many. It's a serialized progression of episodic stories that are all connected, and that's, it's a TV show. It just comes out in theaters, and I enjoy it for what it is, and I think that the best days of the TV show are over. I think that the season that included Endgame, that ended with Endgame, was where the TV show should have ended. I think that was a great ending for the TV show, and I think the season that we are currently watching, that we are currently in, is kind of like they should have stopped. And it was, everyone knew they weren't going to. Everyone knew that the TV show was way too profitable and made too much money for them to stop. So like, it's okay that they kept going. I don't begrudge them for that. But it is just one TV show. The problem is it's taken over everything. And even in that one thing that's sort of like the only thing we get to see now, it's the only thing that really is reliable, that we know will come out in theaters, that will be a big deal. They're very tied to their own rules of like how a movie should be made. My favorite thing about Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness is that they seem to let Sam Raimi make a Sam Raimi movie. And it felt like they let a director have a little bit of creative say. It still felt very much like it belonged and fit in the MCU, but it was nice to see them let a director do his own thing. My least favorite thing about that movie was how it wasn't a multiverse movie and it needed a different title. But that's a conversation for an entirely different episode. The Cooter Boys on TikTok says, "No way, Spider-Man No Way Home was amazing." Was it though? Or was it just like fun to see those three guys in a movie together? You won't get any argument from me that it was fun to see those three guys in a movie together. I was thrilled. I loved seeing those three guys in a movie together. That movie has a horrible screenplay and a horrible plot. And that's fine. It's an MCU movie. Civil War is a way fun movie. Super fun. Seeing all those people team up in the big fight scene at the airport, it makes no sense. The plot of that movie makes no sense. Zemo's whole plot is like, hold on. Your grand plan was that, like, accidentally, by chance, these three characters were all going to show up at this Siberian base at the same time, and they were definitely going to get in a fight to the death? And you just knew that that was going to happen, like, for sure? And that you knew that they were going to play that VHS tape in that base, and that Tony was going to be so mad that it was going to make them fight? That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But whatever, it's the MCU. Like, you just go along with stuff. And No Way Home had maybe the worst plot of any MCU movie ever, where the entire plot was like, everyone's really stupid. Everyone in this movie is way dumber than they've ever been in any other movie. They're so, like, Doctor Strange, who I think we all think is like a pretty smart surgeon, like a very smart person, is so stupid. Is just so insanely stupid that he agrees to do one of the most dangerous spells that he could possibly do because he's just sort of like, whatever, and doesn't tell Peter, like, hey, if you interrupt me while I'm doing this, it could rip the multiverse apart and, like, destroy everything. It could, like, destroy all of reality. And he just starts doing the spell, and Peter's like, hey, wait, can we include? He's like, oh, no, I already started it. And Peter's also so stupid. Just so stupid. Just like, so the whole movie happens because everyone's so stupid. And then conveniently, the only characters that come in from the multiverse are just like these established IP characters from other movies and no one else. The plot of the movie's bad. It's not a good movie. It's bad. But it's fun. It's fun. And that's sort of how these bonus seasons of the MCU have been playing out, is like, it had a good ending. Endgame was a great ending. It was a really wonderful, like, what a great TV show, what a great ending. Let's call it there, and then, like, we can start, like, the new adventures in a few years or something. But they just kept going because it's a very profitable show. And now we just have... But I think they could be doing a better job with writing more interesting plots. But this, I think this is also a factor in the conversation that we're having about the homogenization of art. About the fact that as things get funneled more and more into the same direction, it sort of puts a stranglehold on creativity and possibility. I think that's why I get so frustrated when people didn't like Matt Reeves' Batman movie, because I'm like, hey, the DCEU is a mess. It's a mess. And no one would disagree with that. But the best thing that DC does regularly is these little offshoot movies where they let a director do a thing. And Matt Reeves had an idea and a vision, and for the most part, they let him do it. I've heard tell that Matt Reeves wanted an even darker movie that didn't have quite such a happy resolution, a movie where Batman sort of fails at the end and doesn't actually succeed. I think there's a nice compromise between what the studio wanted, which is we have to have a movie where Batman is triumphant at the end, and what Matt Reeves wanted, which is I want to see a movie where he fails at the end. And I think there's a nice compromise where, like, he does mostly fail. And through that failure, he realizes that he can and that he needs to be more. And we see him sort of taking his first steps into trying to be more. I think it was a nice compromise. But I think that movie was something, a movie that attempted things with existing IP that were interesting and fun and cool and risky. And the people who are like, oh, I hated it, it's not who the character is, I'm just like, well, at least it's someone trying something. At least it's creative and new, and that's exciting, you know? A new thing to be done with existing IP. Just because it's existing IP doesn't mean that there's not new territory to explore with it. That's the problem with the MCU, is it's so homogenized and it's so formulaic that it's sort of dulled down the writer's room, you know? The writer's room doesn't really have as much freedom to try things. They're so beholden. And again, I go back to the conversation of what role do we have in that? What role do we, the audience, play in it? Because they're very much so taking their cues from us. They don't dare to cross us because at the end of the day, it's just capitalism. It's just trying to make money. It's just trying to sell tickets. And if they think that we're going to be so upset that we won't come back and we won't keep buying tickets, they won't put it in the movie, you know? They're just trying to sell tickets. So you have Matt Reeves, who wants to do this ending that's going to be a lot more dark, a lot more risky, that's going to piss off a lot more fans probably. And you have Warner Brothers, who wants to let Matt Reeves take a certain amount of risks up within reason, but still wants to make sure that they appeal to the widest possible audience base, because it's a massive movie and they can't really risk it not doing huge numbers at the box office, as though it ever wouldn't. It's a Batman movie. It was going to be fine. But this is sort of like what happened with that latest Star Wars trilogy. Was it started off with promise. J.J. Abrams did a very nostalgic throwback feeling movie that tonally felt good and felt more practical than the prequels had, and felt very promising with very promising new characters, and left it very open-ended. The problem is they sort of let the audience, the market, dictate where it went from there. And they weren't creatively bold. They were with Rian Johnson. They let Rian Johnson take some really big creative risks, and immediately they freaked out over the audience response to the risks that he took. And they made an entire movie that just apologized for all of those creative risks. They had characters literally in the script apologizing for the creative risks that Rian Johnson took in his movie. And this is why I say, what role do we play? What role do we play in creating the homogenization of art? London Laz, who's part of the BPC, is here. If you don't know about the BPC, it's the Best Pals Club. You can join the Best Pals Club by clicking my name up here in the top left. For all the people listening on the podcast, you can watch this show live on YouTube or on TikTok. We're live on YouTube and TikTok right now. You click my name in the top left, you can join the BPC, and you can be like London Laz, be in the Best Pals Club. That's a fun thing to do. Or you can subscribe to the Patreon. We love our Patreon patrons. They're the best. Patreon.com/AustinArcher. Sigmine over on YouTube says, they should have taken a clue from Infinity War. It had a dark ending, and it's one of the most successful movies ever made. People like being shocked when it's executed well. Who didn't like that ending, dude? What a great ending. But that's why I say I think that the show had its best season in that, like, the show wrapped up lovely with Infinity War and Endgame. And I remember after Infinity War, all these people saying, well, who cares? We all know that it's just going to be undone in Endgame. We all know that it doesn't really matter that the bad guy, quote unquote, won at the end of Infinity War. We all know that it's part one of a two-part movie, and that in part two, he's going to lose. What I don't think people counted on was the fact that they were going to find a way to write into the screenplay that, like, no, what happened in Infinity War has lasting consequences. To do that 5-year time jump, that was massive. And then to not go back in time and, like, just be like, we're going to reset it, it never happened, but actually go, we're going to continue living in a reality where for 5 years, half of all the people on the planet were dead. And we're going to continue to live in a reality where the trauma of that still exists. Even though people are back now, we still have to deal with the ramifications of that. And that's probably the biggest disappointment, I think, of this current season that we're in, is that, like, that's a really interesting territory narratively to explore. And I feel like they keep touching on it, but I feel like I want them to go deeper and go darker with it. And, you know, I don't know. This latest iteration feels, these latest seasons of the MCU feel the most Disney-fied that it's been. And I think it coincides with the TV shows, with, like, the shows on Disney Plus, and it feels just more Disney, and, like, they're afraid to go darker with it. But I loved that ending of Infinity War. I remember sitting in the theater after that movie ended and going, like, that's the end of the movie. And I knew that there was another movie, but this movie, Avengers Infinity War, just ended and they lost. And that's the end. The end roll credits. The bad guy wins. The end. Loved it. Loved it. Brennan over on TikTok says Thor Ragnarok is my favorite. Thor Ragnarok is another movie where they let a director, sort of like Sam Raimi in Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, it's another movie where they let a director do his thing. Some people really don't like Thor Ragnarok because they feel like it's such a left turn departure from what the tone of the MCU and that character was, that it doesn't make sense. I love that movie. It's probably in my top three or top five MCU movies because it's another movie where they let a director really do his thing. And I mean, nobody saw that coming. That's the other problem with this latest season of the MCU is we're sort of like not getting surprised by anything anymore. We've at like 25 movies in, we've sort of seen all the things there are to see. But Thor Ragnarok was a really pleasant surprise after Thor 1 and Thor 2. I don't think anyone saw that Thor 3, that coming. You saw the trailer for Thor Ragnarok and instantly were like, that looks different. And then you went and saw the movie and it was like, this is very different. This is very different in a very refreshing and fun way. And it was sort of all of, it was like the mainstream introduction to Taika Waititi. And it's just different enough. And that's the fun stuff that you can do with existing IP is it doesn't need to completely reinvent the characters or the universe, but just letting, just like Matt Reeves with the Batman, just letting a director have their own vision and letting them like fully realize it. You know, I'm excited for the new Taika movie for Love and Thunder, but it also like, it doesn't have that element of surprise going for it like Ragnarok did. Because it's just going to sort of be Thor Ragnarok 2, which is great. You know, Deadpool 2 is great. A lot of these like funny superhero movie sequels. Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is great. That's another example. Guardians of the Galaxy, letting James Gunn do his own thing with those movies was a great, you know, was a great move. Austin 22 over on YouTube says, do you feel like Thor Love and Thunder has the potential to break molds in the MCU? I do. I think that Christian Bale being on board, especially after he said he would never do another superhero property after doing Batman. I mean, he was Batman, dude. I think we forget about that. You see Christian Bale in that preview and you don't think, oh, that's Batman, because Christian Bale is a transformative actor. But the fact that he was so impressed with Taika Waititi and the screenplay that he said, all right, I'm in. That's promising. Very promising. I'm sort of withholding judgment because I've sort of thought everything in this latest iteration is kind of bad. So maybe it'll be the best one yet. Mrs. Mama Jones says, Austin, I'm really sad today. I just needed to tell someone. Well, I'm sorry to hear that, and thanks for letting me know. That's another. So we were talking today. I mean, we sort of got off track. I think we're still in the ballpark of the conversation. The conversation on the podcast today was about the homogenization of art and how, you know, that's driven by like production companies and record labels and algorithms, but also how they're very much responding to us and what we watch and what responsibility do we have in creating that homogenizing thing. So that's something that I do on my channel frequently is I try to be open emotionally, just like this commenter said, I'm feeling sad today. I just wanted someone to know that like wanting to market yourself as a creator, as a real three-dimensional person who's sometimes sad, who's sometimes anxious, who's not always funny. I talked about this in the podcast episode about cultivating niches and brands and how it's hard sometimes for people who have really carefully crafted a niche or a page or a brand that's all about humor, that's all about funny skits. It's hard for them to know what to say to their audience when, you know, 19 kids die in a school shooting. Like they don't know how to make that funny and how to make a video or a statement about that feels tonally appropriate. So a lot of times they just don't say anything. And these are people with big engaged audiences. And I said in that podcast that I understand it. I get it. I understand. There are a lot of reasons why people don't speak up. There are capitalistic consequences. Sometimes brands don't want to work with you if you do stuff like that. There's also just like, I've had friends who make comedic content who aren't white straight men like I am. Like they're women or they're trans or they're people of color. And when they comment on something that has anything to do with it that's political, they get so much worse backlash in their comment section. I get people calling me a cuck boy, you know, they call me a pedo with my stash and stuff like that, which like I think is really low hanging fruit and uninventive and like unfunny. But these people get a lot worse backlash, like really, really awful things, people DMing them death threats and things like that. So I get why people don't do it, but also that, again, plays into the homogenization of content and funneling everything into one direction, the fear of audience backlash. Again, talking about how do we, the audience, participate in this homogenization? I don't know. Caleb on YouTube says, I do some voice impressions on my channel. Still no subs, though, so far. Maybe someday. Yeah, so this plays into the conversation really well, Caleb. Thank you for that comment. I have a lot of people who are content creators or aspiring content creators on TikTok, on Instagram, who reach out to me regularly and say, what am I doing wrong? What about what I'm doing isn't clicking? How come I'm not getting more views? Am I shadow banned? And this goes into the problem is it's like there are some people who are really talented at something. They're really talented. Maybe they're just like a really talented abstract artist, or they're a really talented voice actor, or they're a really talented, I don't know. There's some people who are really good at some things. But because we live in an era where the only way to let people know about that, or the most effective way to let people know about that, is to get good at making internet content about it, they feel like they're failing at it. And I guess I'm just worried that like we're letting these people down. Like, and we're all suffering for it. We're missing out on a dearth of like wonderful content that we could be getting, amazing stories and music and painting and art from people who feel like they can't find an audience because they can't figure out how to make compelling TikTok content or Instagram Reels content for it. So I don't know. I'm just issuing a challenge to everyone to be like, seek out diverse content. Try to tell them. The powers that be, the producers over at movie companies that make the movies, the record labels, the people, the algorithms, try to tell them that we are interested in diversity when it comes to what we want to consume. Or maybe we're not. I don't know. You know? McJet on YouTube says, I don't understand why you don't have a million subs. You're so talented. Well, McJet, I do have a million subscribers over on TikTok. This is a really funny thing, too, is I genuinely have different audiences on different platforms. I don't think people know this, that like there are close to 50,000 people who follow me on Instagram. I don't think any of them are following me. Maybe like 1,000 of them are following me on TikTok. Like that, those people, they follow me on Instagram and they get my content on Instagram. There's 13,000 people that follow me on Twitter and I see them in the comments and they're the same people every time. And those 13,000 people follow me on Twitter, and there's 13,000 subscribers on YouTube. And I see all of them commenting on the YouTube videos, and the YouTube subscribers only follow me on YouTube. And then there's 1.1 million followers on TikTok. And I know that most of them are only following on TikTok, because if they were following elsewhere, I would have more followers elsewhere. But it's just funny that they don't, that there's like, they're not even aware of the universe outside of the platform that they follow me on. I'm essentially making the same content for all of these platforms and just sort of spreading it around so that no matter where you're following, you're getting it. Right now, I'm literally on YouTube and TikTok at the same time. And then this podcast, the audio, is going to go out to Spotify. So I spread it around to as many different places as I possibly can. But yeah, like even the stuff that I make, it's like there's a podcast, there's music, there's serious music and comedic music. There's skits, there's political commentary. It's too many different things. And I don't think that the audience knows how to know, is necessarily interested in that much changing up of the style and of the genre. I don't know, you know? Sarah Smart on TikTok says, I love your MySpace. I wonder if it's still out there. I don't know. Loon Laughing on TikTok says, "Hey, choosing you over Rosie daily. She's not on live right now, but it's still true." This person was on a live the other day and they said they chose me over Rosie O'Donnell. So that's pretty fun. I don't know what that's going to tell the algorithm. I think Greer Dellinger on YouTube says, "To be honest, I love multifaceted creators because it expands my horizons and keeps things interesting." I mean, yeah. The thing is too, like, I'm not lashing out at y'all in the comments right now either. Like, I'm including myself in this. I have to look at myself and go, like, am I part of the market that's telling them that, like, I'm not interested in a new album by a certain artist unless that album can have a trending TikTok song? I don't think I am, but I also know, like, I am listening to that song by Lizzo. I don't listen to Halsey because I'm just not really a fan. I did listen to the full album by Florence and the Machine. I didn't hear a single song in there that I thought would be a good TikTok trend. But that's the weird thing about TikTok, is like, you don't know what's going to be. How weird do you think Kate Bush feels right now? That, like, just randomly 35 years later, running up that hill is just randomly a like, that's the weird thing too, is when these record labels say, "We don't want to release your song unless you can make it a trend on TikTok," how the hell is Florence and the Machine or Charlie XCX or any of these other artists supposed to guarantee that that happens? There's no way. Like, so much of it is like, it happens organically a lot of the time, you know? So I don't know. Like, Kate Bush must feel weird that just randomly a bunch of people are like, "We like this Kate Bush song right now, and particularly just this part of this Kate Bush song." And all of a sudden we're all listening to Kate Bush albums. Weird, you know? Self-publish, asks somebody on TikTok. Yeah, I mean, I do self-publish. I self-publish everything. When I release my albums, I usually release them exclusively on Bandcamp before I put them on streaming, so that I can have a shot at, like, making a little bit of an ROI on the money that I put into making those albums. So, like, I do self-publish, but there's a trade-off there, and I talked about this at the beginning of the episode, that, like, self-publishing means that you own it outright. You can also do things like trying to get your music licensed so that it can be on commercials and stuff like that, and TV shows and video games, and you can make money that way. And it's, the benefit of that is, like, you get to sort of control how that all happens. But, like, I will never make near as much money self-publishing as someone like Halsey or someone like Charlie XCX or someone like Florence and the Machine make being with a label and touring and doing what they do. And I'll never have nearly the audience size that they have and be able to sell nearly as many tickets. And that just never will happen for someone who self-publishes. So there's a trade-off there. And maybe the answer is that when you go that route, you just need to sort of accept that you're going to be making moves responding to a market, and that it's going to have a lot of, like, capitalism baked in that's going to make the art feel cheapened. And I think I'm okay with that. I think most, I'm not okay with it. I accept it, I should say. I accept that. And I think most artists do and have made peace with the fact that they are in a business and that they have to figure out a way to be financially viable. I think most artists, like, accept that for better or worse. I think what I'm most concerned about in this episode and in this discussion is the homogenization of it all. That everything is being filtered into trying to make it all the same. That we want everything to look the same, to sound the same, to feel the same, because analytics and statistics are showing us that that's what does best with the market. You know? All right. Well, I think I've exhausted this topic. If you're on TikTok, hang out. We'll keep chatting for a little bit longer. Thanks for hanging out on YouTube. Those of you who popped over here, nice to see you. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com. Or you can go to austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. Here's the thing about the album. I talked about this last week on the podcast. I said, I'm releasing an album exclusively on Bandcamp. I did that. I also said, there's going to be a pre-order button for a double vinyl. That didn't happen. I ran into a big problem where I made the album, I released it on GarageBand, and then GarageBand told me, oh, you're not eligible to do our vinyl program. You can't start a campaign to make vinyl with us. And I was like, oh, I didn't know that. And the album was already published, and I had already messaged all of my GarageBand followers, or not GarageBand, Bandcamp followers, and told them that the album was out, and I was like, uh-oh. And so I made the campaign for the vinyl, for the album. It's currently under review by Bandcamp, and I'm waiting to hear back from them on whether or not we can get it done. So hopefully in a few days that will be a reality, and you'll be able to go over to my Bandcamp and pledge that you would like that double vinyl, and we can get them made. A certain amount of people have to pledge that they would like to order that double vinyl, and if we fulfill the orders to justify the cost of manufacturing the albums, they will do it. Bandcamp will do it. So currently, all that's available is the digital download of my new album, Beautiful Things, the deluxe edition. You can head over to the link in my bio on all of my social medias and get that, or just go to austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. If you've already gotten it, thank you so much for getting it. I hope you enjoyed those new songs and the remasters of the songs from the original release of the album. I hope you enjoyed it, and thanks to all the Patreon patrons, we love them so much. If you want to support this show, this content, patreon.com/AustinArcher is a great way to do that. If you're on TikTok right now, you can subscribe to this chat by clicking this button, and you can be part of the Best Pals Club, the BPC. We'd love to have you. All right, I think that's it, okay? That's it. We'll see you next week. Love you so much. Take care of yourselves and each other. Bye-bye. Seems like a codependent person would have more help than they need. But oh my, seems like the more I know, the less I know.